Draw a line under the past. That's the message from a cross-party group of Westminster politicians to the Secretary of State, Karen Bradley. She is currently considering a £150 million plan to deal with the past. Lord Peter Hain and seven other signatories have advised prioritising compensation for victims over investigation.
We're saying the choice now before us that the government has put on the table, £150 million. Do you pursue prosecutions when the evidence shows from the previous historic inquiries that they will not result in the convictions and the bringing to justice that the victims want to see, instead of which we should prioritise that £150 million on supporting victims?
However, there is not universal support for that idea. Here's the Victim Commissioner, Judith Thompson, and her response on Good Morning Ulster earlier today.
I think there are a number of things to consider very carefully from a victims and survivors' point of view about this call. Firstly, it seems to be based on a premise that victims and survivors somehow do not understand the difficulties of prosecuting people. I have absolutely not found that to be the case. These are a deeply realistic and may I say, people who've had a number of negative experiences. These are a group of people who know the difficulties they face, but for those people, knowing as far as can be determined, and they're realistic, the truth of what happened and having people acknowledge harm, and this is harm by all parties, this call is for all harm by all people to be shoved under the carpet and forgotten about. That is not what victims and survivors are asking for, and they do understand that prosecutions won't happen.
So is financial support for victims of the Troubles a better way to spend £150 million set aside to deal with legacy issues rather than those fresh investigations? Let's speak to Andre Murphy from Relatives for Justice. Good morning to you, Andre.
Morning.
And the former Assistant Chief Constable, Alan McQuillan. Good morning to you, Alan.
Good morning.
Andre, first of all, yourself, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I suppose the first things that occur to me is that, you know, you have a range of people in London who might have done something for victims and survivors over the past decades and did absolutely nothing for them. And now they're coming when we're on the precipice of delivering mechanisms that might be flawed, but some mechanisms that will address the needs of victims and survivors. And they come along and they say, no, rip that up and let's do something else, with this sort of benign attitude of we know better, when all of the mechanisms that have been proposed are based very much on previous discussion, long-term discussions with victims, survivors, starting with the Eames-Bradley process. So I thought that was the first thing. But for me, you know, reparations and the needs of victims and survivors is completely indivisible from the need for truth and justice. And society should be delivering both to victims and survivors as a right to them, rather than some idea that we can pick and choose what we're going to deliver to victims and survivors depending on what's comfortable for the people sitting in power. I think once again we're talking above the heads of people who have suffered the most from our conflict, rather than ensuring that we deliver to their needs.
So you might have heard Peter Hain on Good Morning Ulster earlier. We played a clip of him there, but his point was that the old historical inquiries team, they completed work relating to 1,600 cases and 2,000 deaths linked to those, but they only led to three prosecutions, Andre. So in terms of the results from these investigations, he's suggesting perhaps they do not justify the means.
Yeah, and that's looking at it purely through the prism of prosecutions. Firstly, the HET was deeply flawed, which was why it had to be disbanded, because it was acting illegally and not seeking truth and justice, particularly in the cases of state killings. But aside from that, victims and survivors very much engaged in the HET because it was the first time that there might be some form of investigation. When that was shown to be flawed, they were very, very hurt. Having a new process that for the first time might deliver real independent investigations, with the process of that, which will deliver, which will uncover new facts, which may not result in prosecution, but will at least set the record straight on who did what to whom, and with the ICIR also give a measure of why that was done, is going to be so important for families who have never had any answers to the questions that they've had. Prosecutions is not the only outcome that families need. They need multiple outcomes. And, you know, reparations should be tied to uncovering truth and those answers, so that we have a measure of the real harm that families went through.
The consultation document outlined plans, Alan McQuillan, for an historical investigations unit which would have a caseload of about 1,700 troubles-related deaths and aim to complete its work within 5 years. You heard what Andre said there in terms of families and relatives of those that seek justice. They deserve that on multiple levels.
Well, you know, I was a police officer for 30 years, and if you ask me my intrinsic thought on this is, I would really want to see if there's evidence available that will bring people to justice for crimes they committed. I want to see it investigated. But on another level, having looked at what's proposed, it is utterly impossible. The timescale and budget is nonsense. I think Dame Lilla touched on this last week. And there's a former ombudsman who can't be so...
That's the former police ombudsman.
Yeah, she knows what the difficulties in this. The practical difficulties in this, to do what is suggested, would actually require a police force, a new police force, a new service, whatever it's going to be called, about a third to half the size of PSNI.
So you basically think, Alan, this is not realistic, 1,700 cases.
It's not just realistic, it's totally impossible.
And 5 years.
I thought it would be set up to fail. Let's take an example. It's 1,700 murders. There are 850 murders a year in the UK, and most of those are relatively simple domestic investigations.
Okay, but do you have any idea, Alan, how big that historical investigations unit might actually be, this new one?
I think it would have to be about a third the size of PSNI to deliver this.
How big is that? Give us a number.
About 2,000 staff. The other issue on that is the skills. These investigations require competent, experienced detectives. Anything less would just be a sham. Those skills do not exist in the UK or elsewhere.
Are you kind of saying, Alan, that this is impossible?
I believe it is impossible. I don't believe we could produce the organisation of the size. I don't believe the budget is adequate.
Well, what message does that send then to victims, Alan? Victims and their families, if we're saying, look, it's impossible, if justice is what you want, what you seek, then we just can't deliver that for you.
I think the key function in this should be to go down the other element of the proposals in relation to the research and evaluation and giving people the information. I completely agree about the issue in terms of supporting victims and giving them the information, the facts about what happened. But there are other mechanisms that can do that. It seems to me that the other proposal in the package on unveiling the truth from the records is very similar to what happened in Germany after the wall was brought down, where people have been murdered, abducted, imprisoned for years, and they were able to go in and get a rational, professional assessment of all the information held by the state about that. And I also think that should apply to the Irish Republic as well, because in many cases in Northern Ireland there was an Irish dimension to the issues as well, and I think we need that brought in.
Andre?
Well, I think there's a number of points that Alan brings up there. First of all, around how realistic it might be and the skills that are required. Last week, Relatives for Justice made its submission, and we're very honest. You know, the timescale isn't realistic, the funding isn't realistic. That does not mean that this should not be done. In terms of the skill set that is required, we think that it can be done if we broaden what we view as the necessary skill set for these investigations. For instance, the International Criminal Court, which looks at the most serious of crimes that are committed across the globe and is able to bring people to justice in the cases that they bring forward, their investigators have multidisciplinary skills, and so they are brought from a wider variety of skills than just police. And that would serve not only to widen the skill set, the number of people that could be recruited, but it would also help with the confidence in the new HIU to ensure that, because there is a confidence matter where people would be worried that former RUC or PSNI who were involved in legacy investigations might be involved in these investigations.
And in relation to those officers, where would you find them? You've heard what Alan McQuillan says this morning. They would need around 2,000 of those, and he doesn't know where they actually, or if they actually exist, or where they would get them from.
Well, George Hamilton certainly wouldn't have the same view as Alan McQuillan about what's realistic, and he certainly is supporting the idea of the HIU and that it is realistic. What we're saying, and you know, I think there's a bit of exaggeration there from people who maybe are reluctant to see independent investigations taking place.
Yeah, there you go, Alan. You're exaggerating.
I'm not exaggerating. It depends on what you do here. First of all, I agree with the point. You can bring investigators from all sorts of areas, and they will have to adapt to the UK system. It's going to take time to do that. Ask Daniela how long it took for her investigators who came from New Zealand and America, for example, to become fully effective. So you've got that lead-in time. But the question is, are those people going to be prepared to come here? It was one thing to bring them in at the start of the peace process when everything was positive and we were moving forward. We now have a political cesspit. Are they going to want to come in, and people going to want to come in and work on that? And what is strictly a 5-year limited contract? I don't think they are, but even so, let me be quite clear, I am very happy to see investigations if they go on a fair, impartial basis, but they have to have the skills. And if we don't put the skills in, then we're actually misleading the victims about
okay.
what they're really getting.
Can you tell me, Alan, how many people were in the old historical inquiry unit?
I'm sorry, I can't. I think it was a number of, I think it was less than 100. I'm not sure.
So you're saying, that's obviously an estimation, but from 100 to 2,000, that's your figure?
Yeah. I think that to do this within 5 years across 1,700 murders, there are national UK standards for what staff that should be applied to murder.
Okay.
Typically, you'd want to see a team of about 6 minimum working on it. You're going to have to spend a reasonable period of time. And the reality is, too, if you don't spend a reasonable time, then, frankly, organisations like Relatives for Justice and all the other support will rightly challenge you and challenge you in the court.
Okay, let's see what
so
you think at home this morning.
This organisation will have all the problems.
Okay.
The previous attempts have meant that they got married in all these legal issues.
030-30-80-55-55. Fra in North Belfast. Good morning, Fra. Go ahead.
Good morning, Vinny. Thanks very much. Vinny, I'm not going to pretend to speak on behalf of any of the victims or any of their families, but listening to both the dialogue this morning and what Alan McQuillan said and some of the MPs over in Westminster and the people involved in drawing up this kind of legislative proposal, it smacks to me of a continued cover-up. What I would be very keen to see is complete transparency for everything that happened, to include opening up the Pandora's box of the dirty war, to see how police handlers and people like the British intelligence, the RFU, and these other groups that were involved in maybe directing terrorism, plus the impact on
where would you direct that money, Fra, that £150 million plan that Karen Bradley is currently considering? Where would you put that?
Well, you see, firstly, I don't consider that to be enough money. I don't believe the 5 years is long enough to kind of go through this full process of proper transparency and finding justice for the family. So just because they're throwing out $150 million, I don't think anyone should automatically agree that's the correct sum of money. I don't believe in giving $150 million to the victims' families.
So how much would you put that number at, Fra? I guess what I really mean is, where would you draw the line?
I don't think, you know, people can say that you can't just have an open checkbook and endlessly spend money in the pursuit of the possibility of not having prosecutions. But Finny, as far as I'm concerned, there should be no financial restrictions on the truth. I saw posters that were on the Andrew Road many years ago, and it said truth costs nothing, cover-ups cost millions.
Okay.
So for me, Vinny, as an individual living here, they should spend as much money as it takes to bring justice to the families and as much money as it takes to provide legal compensation to those who were injured.
Okay, Fra, thank you. Jim, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Jim.
Thank you very much, Vinny. I have no real belief in Mr. Hayne and his cohort, Mr. Blair,
they were able to give out the comfort letters with no problem. I agree with the victims, Commissioner Judith Thompson. It's not a question of either or. The victims, and I mean innocent victims, are entitled to both. And by innocent victims, I mean people who did not contribute to their own injuries. Now, Fra's on there talking about British intelligence and the flu. If this does nothing else, it will help to contradict the rewriting that the Sinn Féin IRA are trying to do with the legacy to rewrite it in their own favour.
Well, you know they would object to being labelled a Sinn Féin IRA, but just to make the point that you and Fra, to an extent, do agree, it's an open checkbook type of thing that you think is important and it shouldn't be a choice between prosecution or compensation.
My difference, Finney, is this should be for innocent victims only, not people who were instituting their own damage to themselves.
Andre Murphy?
I suppose that we need to take it from a rights-based approach. So those who suffered violations should have a right to investigation and a right to reparation. And for so many families, you know, the violation was accompanied with being plunged into abject poverty and suffering decades of terrible economic harm, as well as at the same time trying to have to cope with their trauma and trying to pursue a level of justice which was not available to them. So for families, they can't divide any of those experiences into boxes. That is the same experience they suffered since the violation.
Yeah, but you know, Andre, that the question of who is a victim will come up here.
Well, you know, I don't think that it's too difficult for us to say, well, here is the violation and it's very clear where the violations are and they need to be investigated. And then the issue of innocence or guilt comes at the end of that, where we'll see who exactly were they guilty. Because don't forget that many people, especially those who were harmed by state violence, were labelled as being guilty people, you know, as part of the cover-up. So part of the investigation process will be to examine those mistruths that were put out as part of the violation in the first place. And that's why independent investigation is so important. And
we'll Andre, rights-based is a Sinn Féin IRA. That's their terminology.
Well, actually,
impartiality is called into question when you use that same terminology.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
Okay, Jim, let her respond and then we'll come back to you, Jim. Andre, go ahead.
The wonderful thing about human rights is, and, you know, that isn't a term that was made up by Sinn Féin or the IRA or by the British government or by any of the loyalist organisations. These are international principles. And, you know, December will see the 70th anniversary of the signing of the UN Declaration on Human Rights. They are principles that rise above all of that. So it allows all of us, no matter who harms us, to be able to go to rights and say they must apply to all of us universally. And no one should be afraid of that. Absolutely.
Comfort letters were in line with rights-based civil rights.
Well, no, they weren't. And, you know,
no, they bloody weren't. No, they weren't.
That was an entirely different process that has absolutely nothing...
It concerned one of the protagonists in the situation. And only for one side.
Yeah, and that's exactly why we need rights-based processes that ensure that everyone can have confidence in them and everyone who has been harmed by our conflict can have confidence in them and that there is no partiality, because that has been the problem to date, where there hasn't been confidence in the REC or the PSNI, there hasn't been confidence in any sort of idea of side deals that may have come out of negotiation. This must be above all of that and away from all of the actors so that all of those harmed can have confidence in it, no matter who was responsible for the harming, to ensure that families will have clarification of what happened to them and that becomes a historical narrative and not lies that were told during the conflict or any sort of narrative coming from any party to the conflict as a result.
Alan McQuillan, as the disagreement, which has gone on for a long time now in terms of who is a victim, continues, there are people then that are left without compensation that might actually make a huge difference to their lives, maybe linked to injuries that they sustain through no fault of their own.
Absolutely. I mean, I know people in exactly that position, and I know very many victims who have very different views on what they want out of any victim process. And I mean, just listening to the debate today, you see the fault lines in all of this. I started off this by saying I would really love to be able to say, as a former police officer, I would love to put bad people in prison and to stop people being injured. But first of all, taking on your point, this does not deal with the harms inflicted on most people. It proposes to investigate 1,700 murders. That's about half the murders that were committed. It does absolutely nothing for the other victims, the people who were injured and sometimes who spent lives in wheelchairs, whose lives were destroyed by the injuries they suffered. It does nothing for those as well. I think this is a deeply failed process. Sorry,
go ahead, Andre.
No, I completely agree with Alan on that. You know, last week's RFJ submission makes that very point. We do need to have a process that looks at the serious violations, including injuries, torture and other violations that are there, because there are state obligations to ensure effective investigations around those. And, you know, people who've had HET reports who are dissatisfied or don't have confidence in them absolutely should be included in the deaths that are investigated by the HIU as well. And Alan also mentioned cross-jurisdictional issues. There are people who are harmed in the South, in England and on the continent, who also need effective investigations. With very little extra, we could make this really important and really special, where we ensure that all of the harms are investigated.
How much extra?
Well, ensuring that it's a cross-jurisdictional body, much like the Commission on the location of the remains of the disappeared, and that we ensure that we include all of the other violations all of the other serious violations like torture and serious injuries are investigated as well. Why would we leave anyone behind when we have the opportunity to ensure that we actually do address our past?
Let's go back to the phones on this. Mary in Donegal. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Vinnie. I think, forget about the investigation. Get all these people in power and community organisations who are being paid by the British government and the Southern government, the Godfathers and the government, Tony Blair's people, bring them all together. They put people out of their misery and tell the truth what really happened, which doesn't cost a penny.
But what about the investigations, which you just missed there in a couple of words? The victims, the family of victims, who they want justice, and they might want investigations to be carried out to try and bring that justice to the forefront.
Vinnie, these people are never going to tell the truth unless you diminish their power and change the mindset of the voters who vote them in, who are brainwashed, and they're totally... There's rewriting history here, right? They're lying to people. The people who are lying that is in power, these people who work up in Stormont, who know who did what. Families want to know, why did you murder my loved one? Why did you take my loved one away? We want truth. We want justice. And you don't have to go to prison. You need to tell the truth and diminish the power of the people who are still alive today.
Mary, thank you. There are some, Andre, although Peter Hain said this isn't the case, but we'll look at this as an amnesty of sorts. So if that money went purely towards compensation and not towards further investigation, then people would perceive that some are getting off without prosecution.
I suppose for many people, they already have lived with a de facto amnesty, where people haven't been brought to account for the harms that they've committed. The prospect of independent investigation means that they may see a process without amnesty for the very first time. So, you know, while we are on the cusp of delivering that, saying, forget about that, and now for the very first time, let's look at monetary compensation, does smack of the idea that we will not hold people accountable and that they are trying to sidestep accountability. And when you see the names that are on that list, people who were, you know, Tom King was there when Pat Finucane was killed, Peter Hain was part of the government that denies an independent inquiry into Pat Finucane. There's vested interests there as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if people were using words like amnesty and were a bit sceptical about it.
Okay, Robert in Belfast. Robert, go ahead.
Hiya, Dan.
Good morning.
Benny, listen, just out of curiosity, I mean, we're doing this historical inquiry. We're going to have people going along and doing inquiries into loyalist deaths from Republicans. When you get to the end of the process, and then suddenly you're going to find that the Republican pulls out this letter signed by Tony Blair saying, why have a get out of jail free letter? So you're going to waste all that money on the people. People done wrong on both sides. They're both done wrong. But as long as we keep bringing up the past, we'll never have a future.
I understand that point, but can I ask you a personal question? You know, were you impacted by the Troubles? Or
I've had quite a few family that's been... You were just talking about one of the big ones on the IRA side. I had one of my family who was killed to protect him.
What about the likes of pensions and compensation for those that are left behind, whether they are, you know, they've been injured or indeed they have lost loved ones? You know, should we funnel all this money into that?
Well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with giving people money to help them through it, but does money really fix the problem that's in your head? Money doesn't fix the problem that's in your head. It's always going to be there.
Let's talk about physical issues or maybe mental issues as well. Money doesn't necessarily make you happy, but it can improve your life quality sometimes if you have things that have impacted your life, maybe your ability to work. And that's maybe through no fault of your own. Richard in Belfast, go ahead.
Hi. If I was one of the victims involved in one of these 1,700 cases, why can I not make the choice? Would you like us to pursue this through investigation and the courts can, or would you like compensation? I would want to make that choice. I wouldn't want everybody else in the world deciding on my behalf what was the right choice for me. Simple as that, isn't it?
Okay, Richard, thank you. Last call on this for now. Peter, good morning.
Is Al McClellan still there?
He's actually just gone, to be fair to him. But do make your point, Peter.
My point is that how can you have a fair crack at the whip for everything if people got letters stating they're not allowed to be prosecuted or they're not allowed to be investigated? So you're getting to a point where one side of the community is going to be hit and the other one's not. And to me, I don't think you need to be a brains of Britain to know if you've got a letter, there's a good chance the police thought you were up to something or you wouldn't have got a letter. And number two, somebody else's truth is somebody else's lies.
Okay. Peter, thank you for your call this morning. Thanks to Andre Murphy and Alan McQuillan as well.